today we're interviewing David Vexler, who is a partner in Vellum Capital and also a creator of the Bitcoin Consultancy. David, how are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Great, David.
Both Martin and I are interested in this Bitcoin phenomena, and we thought we'd have you on to kind of flesh out some of the history of it and tell us what is cryptocurrency?
Sure.
Please go ahead.
Where can I start? So I think if you remember one thing about this conversation, it is the why. Why do we need an alternative to fiat money? And the story of money is a long story, because as long as we've had civilization, we have had money. And of course, there are many kinds of money. Some places, cattle are still used as money. In some places, seashells. In some places, it's been big rocks that are like family heirlooms. But sometime a few thousand years ago, we found that gold was a very good money because it was scarce and shiny and durable. And so gold has been money for all of human history and pretty much every human civilization until 1913, which is when the Federal Reserve Bank was created. And at that point, pretty much every other government in the world followed and moved to a fiat money. And so before we talk about what Bitcoin is, let's talk about what the problem with fiat money is.
Yes, let's do that.
The basic problem is that the reason that fiat money was created to replace gold as the global money was to give governments more power. So before fiat money, if you wanted to have a war, you had to pay the soldiers' salary and you had to pay for the cannons and the ships and so on. And you had to do that through two ways. You either raised taxes or you borrowed money. And then that gave you the gold and you used the gold to buy whatever you need to run the war. But with fiat money, you don't have to do that because everybody's using your money and all you have to do is print more money. And then you can use that money to redirect the entire economy to the pursuit of the war. And so that's a big reason why we had a world war shortly after the central banks moved off the gold standard in 1913, because now they could redirect the total economic output of the state, of all states, to the pursuit of the war. You could arbitrarily redirect industry just by printing more money. And that's exactly what they did and doing war bonds and use that to redirect the entire civilization to war. And of course, there have been many other goals that governments have pursued besides war. War is just one of the most destructive ones. But when you had the Great Depression, likewise, government had major new programs that were paid for through printing money instead of raising taxes. And so the ability to have fiat money basically allows governments enormous power over society that is kind of hidden. So whereas with taxes are visible. You pay taxes, it's visible. You know how much of your wealth is being redirected to the government. But with the money, with fiat money, through inflation, governments can, in a hidden way, redirect society and capital markets to whatever they want. And they've been doing that. And one major motivation that politicians have, because the world is now mostly run by democracies, is to make the economic numbers go up, make the GDP numbers go up. So when elections are coming up, there's a strong motivation for politicians to print more money and lower the interest rates. So what they do, they lower the interest rates to create more investments, to loan money, to give to the people, and that makes them more popular. The problem is that when you lower the interest rates, you direct capital to new spending, but you don't have the corresponding savings. So I'm sorry for the economic lesson here, but it is important to understand that all human progress depends on savings. So when you had the caveman fisherman who caught fish with his bare hands and he wanted to be more productive, he would have to set aside some fish, catch some extra fish, not eat it. He would have to save some fish to build some fish hooks or build a net. And so he would take that savings and invest that time in increasing his capital. And so that's how all savings work. We set aside some consumption to invest in increasing our capital, create a better future. And that's how human progress has been happening for thousands of years. until with fiat money, the governments are manipulating the interest rates. So when you lower the interest rate, you create a lot more investment, but you actually decrease savings. So that's what happens is suddenly you have all these new ventures happening that are not backed by corresponding savings. And so all these ventures are malinvestment. They start failing because they don't have the corresponding savings to, you know, you don't have the factories and the web developers and the resources, the oil to fund all this new investment. And so it fails. And that's how you get business cycles. So the 20th century and now the 21st century has been a story of one business cycle after another because governments are manipulating the interest rate for political gain. And that is made possible by having fiat money. And so this person, Satoshi Nakamoto, he was quite explicit when he created Bitcoin one day in August 2008. This is the problem he's solving. He said, you cannot trust the central banks to be honest with the money. It's causing all this economic instability, and I have an idea to fix it, and I'm going to call it Bitcoin. So he was very clearly a libertarian who wanted to fix the money. And he said that Bitcoin is going to have a hard cap of 21 million. So if you remember one thing about Bitcoin, it's this. There's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoin. And as of 2 days ago, 90% of all Bitcoin that will ever exist has already been mined. The other 10% will be mined by the year 2140. And so it's a scarce asset. If you take all the gold in the world, it will not quite fill two Olympic-sized swimming pools. It's also scarce. Because when the price of gold goes up, you can mine more gold. But when the price of Bitcoin goes up, you cannot mine more Bitcoin. Bitcoin is designed in such a way that the supply of Bitcoin is constant, independent of how much resources is dedicated to Bitcoin mining.
Let me ask you this. And again, I'm a novice, but I'm not afraid to ask dumb questions. Let's say in the stock market, I'm going to take my dollars and I'm going to buy a share or 100 shares of stock in hopes that that stock will increase in value. So I do that. Now, since there is a limited supply of Bitcoin, how is Bitcoin increasing in value when there's only that limited a supply?
So
let's say I had 10 Bitcoins and I bought them at $100 each, and now they're, what, 60,000 each now?
50-ish.
So how did that get to be 50-ish?
Think of it as real estate. If you have a plot of land and some number of houses, the demand for that land keeps going up, but there's only some fixed quantity of land. And so if you had some foresight and you bought up 10 plots of land, demand keeps going up, and so you can sell it for more than what you paid for it. Or with gold, it's a scarce asset. Demand keeps going up, but the quantity is the same. Mm. Like any scarce asset with a fixed quantity, the value of each unit will increase.
Okay. I know there seems to be a plethora of cryptos out there. You know, I mean, Amazon is going to create their own, I think, and Facebook is the same. So, but I know that Bitcoin and Ethereum seem to be the two best or two leading ones. Is that correct?
That is correct. So I will start by saying that Bitcoin is unique in the space. It was the first, is the only one with a 13-year track record.
Okay.
And what's most important about Bitcoin is this commitment to a hard cap of 21 million. So compare that to Ethereum, which has a completely arbitrary supply schedule. So the creation rate of Ethereum basically changes year to year, according to the Ethereum leadership team in the community. Bitcoin has the hardest commitment to fixed supply. And so I think Bitcoin is going to capture the vast majority, maybe 90-95% of the value in the space. But you should know that each asset is a different business model. So Bitcoin is money. Ethereum is a smart contract platform. They solve different problems.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the term mining a moment ago. So Bitcoin, is it actually a coin? Or is it, what is it? Is it a digital asset? What is it?
Digital gold. It's a scarce asset. And the way that the asset has been created is through solving hard math problems. And we call that mining just as an analogy. But essentially, Bitcoin is created by people competing, the miners competing to solve difficult math problems. And the first person to solve that math problem gets each new chunk of Bitcoin. And so the supply of Bitcoin that we have is basically those miners selling the Bitcoin they mined by solving those problems to the Bitcoin community.
I noticed lately I've been listening to some other Bitcoin-specific podcasts, and they use the term HODL and DeFi. I think HODL means hang on for dear life or something like that. Can you describe what that actually means?
I'll start by saying that many people in the space are novice investors. They're really being exposed to markets, financial markets, for the first time. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to get in trouble and get emotional and lose your shirt. And so HODL is a typo which was backronymed to hang on for dear life, but it basically means think long term. Don't try to make short term gains. It's really just that concept.
So it's like buy and hold.
Buy and hold. That's yes, that's all it is.
Okay. And DeFi, what is the DeFi?
Oh, right. I'm sorry. So the origin of HODL is literally some guy was drunk and he was typing that I can't make smart decisions while I'm drunk, so I'm going to HODL on. And he meant to say hold. That is the whole thing.
I see.
All right. So Bitcoin is money, but there's many other digital tokens or digital assets that solve different problems. Hmm. And so DeFi is an attempt to create an alternative to the traditional financial system. So now we have this, what's the word for it? Backronym, CeFi. CeFi is centralized finance. In other words, all the financial stuff that we have before, whereas DeFi is decentralized. Okay. It has no official organization. It has nobody officially behind it. It has no legal entity. It is all a network of autonomous smart contracts that are providing financial services, whether it's financial markets or autonomous corporations or property deeds. DeFi is decentralized finance where no person or institution can control the financial entity.
That's what will lead to this also term Web3 or Web 3.0 or something like that.
So Web3 is a clever bit of marketing to say that this is the future of the web. But Web3 is simply the set of tools that we use to interact with the smart contracts on the blockchain.
Okay. I think the chief aspect of Bitcoin, which what has me interested, is what we've already talked about, but I don't think what can be emphasized enough is the decentralization of it, the separation of state and economics, if you will, because that's what the secular foxhole, we're chiefly for the separation of state, religion, state, and economics, state, and thought. You get the government as small as possible.
Bitcoin is a separation of the state and money. Bitcoin has no CEO, it has no leader, it has no company behind it. It is a community where anybody can contribute to it, and all decisions are made by consensus.
What do you think of things like Coinbase or the dozens and dozens of other, entry platforms for people to look at? Are some of them, as you said earlier, are they scams or...
Well,
offhand.
Let's talk about two different things. There's the infrastructure, the ecosystem providing services to interact with crypto.
Okay.
So if you want to buy Bitcoin, you have to buy it from somebody who ultimately the chain goes to a miner, but miners don't sell directly to consumers. So you need some kind of coordinator to buy Bitcoin from.
Okay.
And right now, that's mostly centralized entities. So Coinbase is just a marketplace where you can think of it, miners make the Bitcoin available for sale, and then consumers can go and buy it. That it's perfectly legitimate.
And
right now, we need to have the coordination.
Okay.
So how could it be easier, as we are newbies and novice in this? We talked in the green room, something called Podcasting 2.0 applications, and how you could stream parts of Bitcoin called Satoshis by listening to a podcast using these new applications. But at this time, I think it's maybe a couple of thousand of podcasters using this. In total, it could be 4 million podcasts out there, but probably active podcaster could be in an estimate guess like 500,000 or something like that. So how do you see that it will be easier to buy and sell and but at the same time be safe and not be scammed? And I will come back to that question also about scam coins.
Well, let me answer one question, which is, so if you want to get into crypto and own Bitcoin, this is what you do.
Yep.
You sign up for a Bitcoin exchange. I recommend Gemini, Gemini.com, because it just has low fees. Coinbase is another good one. In different countries, there are different options available. I think Coinbase is in many countries, Gemini is in many countries. So for a fee of 1% or less, you can buy some Bitcoin. And here's the important part. You take possession of it. So when you buy Bitcoin on an exchange, you don't own Bitcoin. All you own is a claim on Bitcoin. So when you take possession of it, you withdraw the Bitcoin from an exchange to your wallet. And what I have is a hardware wallet, which is a little physical device, and it stores the keys to my Bitcoin. And that is why I secure it.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to. My next question would be, what is a hot wallet and a cold wallet and so on? Go ahead.
A hot wallet is basically one that is connected to the internet. So if you have a wallet on your phone or your computer, those are devices that are connected to the internet. They store it at an exchange. Those are hot wallets. Somebody could potentially hack into that and steal it. And I work with a lot of people, literally thousands, that have had their Bitcoin stolen or their crypto stolen. But a cold wallet is not connected to the internet. There's a few kinds. One is as a little hardware device. There's a few vendors making them. Trezor, Ledger, KeepKey are all vendors. And they are devices, basically, they only work when they're plugged in. And all they do is they store Bitcoin and sign transactions. You can also, or what you should do is, besides that, write down your Bitcoin seed words that generate your wallet on a paper. What I recommend is you get a steel plate. You can buy them for around $40. And you either etch the seed on the steel plate, or they have little letter cards that you slide in there. And so that allows your seed to be waterproof, fireproof. Your entire home can burn down, and that hardened steel is fine.
Oh, wow. I never heard of that one. That's interesting. Now, was your background in finance before you, I guess, switched over to Bitcoin? Or
so in 2013, I was living in Shanghai. I lived in China for 5 years, and I was asked to build a Bitcoin exchange just as a technologist. And so I did, and that was my introduction to the space. And that's when I started. That's when I was sold on the mission. I've been active and a student of Austrian economics since 2003. I was an intern at the Mises Institute in 2004. And so that was the connection that told me that Bitcoin is important. And it took a few years, but ultimately I decided in 2013 to invest in it. And yeah, I've been active in the space since then. The finance, it came much later, around 2018. I started the hedge fund.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And David, you have an interesting mission there regarding how to say clean up the space in a way and help people who have lost keys and others, and but also all the scams out there. So one thing is if you go through the list with legit cryptocurrencies and to learn which to pick, and now we have picked told about some safe ones in a way. But for example, I don't know if we should tell any about names, but I know here in Europe heard about horror stories of how people have been fooled by that they are not real cryptocurrency. It's more made up, and people then lose money off that one, and people continue with this. Could you tell a bit about this project? How many entries have you gotten, and could you see some picture of that, about this regarding scams?
Yes. So Bitcoin is software, and anybody can go and make a copy of that software, and many people have. There's now over 20,000 different cryptocurrencies. Again, it's just as simple as copy-paste software, change a few parameters, launch your own cryptocurrency. Oh, and people see the trillion-dollar value of Bitcoin, and they want to make some money. Not to say that everybody wants to do that. There's some well-meaning projects, but the vast majority are just get-rich-quick schemes. And so that's why I always say, if you're a beginner, just buy and hold Bitcoin. Just focus on Bitcoin. Don't buy anything else. Don't be lured by stories of 1,000x or 100,000x returns last year. Just focus on Bitcoin. It's the only crypto with a hard cap, with a 12-year track record. So each different crypto is a different proposition, different business model. They are trying to do different things. Bitcoin is just pure money. Many others are just trying to do something very different. And if you want to evaluate it, you have to look at whether the business model makes sense. Like there's one token, which is a coin for dentists, for dentist offices to pay for dental procedures. It makes no sense whatsoever why you need a separate money to pay your dentist. It's ridiculous. And There's literally thousands, tens of thousands of project lists that don't make any business sense whatsoever. There's the gambling ones and there's pot ones and there's all kinds of projects that make no sense. So if you're new to the space, just buy some Bitcoin, store it on your wallet, don't invest it, don't fall for trading schemes. Really, the scams out there are nothing new. As long as they've been money, they've been scams. And the same advice applies. Keep your money safe. Invest conservatively if you're going to invest it at all.
I agree. Thank you for that. El Salvador has been in the press the last week or two about apparently the president or chancellor of El Salvador has created a Bitcoin sector or something to that effect. Or is this whole country going to Bitcoin? I'm not sure. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. So 20 years ago, El Salvador admitted they screwed up their own currency and they dollarized. They said, we are not responsible enough to have our own money. We're just going to use a dollar. And so for 20 years, they've been doing that until 2020, when the president of El Salvador said that we no longer want to put all our eggs in the dollar basket. We don't trust the dollar. And so President Bukele said that we're going to add a second legal tender to the dollar, and that's going to be Bitcoin. So now they have two legal tender currencies, Bitcoin and the dollar. And they're building a whole ecosystem. Because it is legal tender, you don't pay capital gains tax when you sell it. There's all kinds of legal implications of it being legal tender. And so that's attracting a lot of business to El Salvador. Now, I have no idea if it'll be successful. It's not exactly a free market economy. It's a tiny little country in South America. So I have no idea if it's going to work. But that is the premise behind it.
Does the, you know, the average person there use Bitcoin, for example, when they go to the supermarket or whatnot? We had here in the links here that Blair found an article here called Crypto and the Global Financial System on a newsletter there talking about how to practical use cryptocurrency in your daily life and the challenges of that.
So the government of El Salvador trying to make it easy for any business. Actually, they basically, I think they passed a law that legal tender means you must accept it for payment of all debts, private and public. That is the definition of legal tender. Okay. So all businesses must accept Bitcoin. And so the government is trying to provide the infrastructure. So it's not exactly a free market movement because legal tender means the government is forcing you to accept this money. So I don't support legal tender laws of any kind, including for Bitcoin. But regardless, it seems that they have managed to enable every business to accept Bitcoin as payments and then convert it to dollars if they choose.
Do you, I'm sorry, go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, you recently wrote in blog post about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and versus gold. And you talked about the great introduction to economics and history. Have you seen any examples? For example, remember, I don't know if that's the case, but a company like Gold Money or other. Have you seen any experiment with that, linking real money like gold and silver to cryptocurrencies?
So you can already buy a crypto token, which is linked to gold bullion. Okay. I just heard about a new project which allows you to take delivery of gold bullion, basically buying and redeeming crypto tokens. Mm-hmm. So that is already possible. I think if you want to buy gold, buy gold. You don't need a separate digital token for that. But if you're into that, that's already an option.
There's some in the Austrian school who they dismiss the Bitcoin, and they say, you know, they're staunch gold and silver, what is what we need. And they look at Bitcoin as a fad. Obviously, I think you disagree with that.
So I have a podcast coming up where I'm going to go deep into Austrian theory and talk about why that's wrong. I mean, I was in that school. I bought gold bullion back in 2008. And Bitcoin was around for a while and I was accumulating gold. But I obviously changed my mind on that. There's technical reasons why some Austrians are skeptical of Bitcoin that I won't go into right now. But
Sure.
But I think it's mostly traditionalism. Gold has a history going back to all of human history. Bitcoin is very new. And so they dismiss it. I think if you learn more and understand what it is, you'll be a lot more open to it.
What are some of the books you've read or authors that you know of that you'd recommend to our listeners and to us?
If you read one book about Bitcoin, it's called The Bitcoin Standard by Amos Seyfedin, The Bitcoin Standard, and it will tell you the why of Bitcoin. It's not technical at all. It will tell you why fiat money is bad and we need to have a sound hard money system. And Amos just wrote a second book called The Fiat Standard. So the first one is The Bitcoin Standard, which talks about why we need Bitcoin. And the second book is The Fiat Standard, which talks about why fiat money is so bad. So he's a little, how can I put it, a little dramatic sometimes for my taste. He blames fiat money for like art, for bad art and bad food and war and everything. But in any case, it's still a great book. The second book that I like is Bitcoin, Hard Money You Can't Quit. I don't know if you're allowed to curse on the show, but that is the title of the book, and it's very good.
Yeah, that's great. So thanks for tips about that. And maybe we could talk about that like a news thing also. It's have been popping up in like Twitter feed and others, like about who is the real Satoshi. And it was recently, was it a guy in Australia, and it was some court case, and also what's NTFs, because I've seen a very
NFTs actually. NFTs.
NFT. Yeah, thanks.
So the important thing about Satoshi, and we don't know if it's a person or a team, we really have no idea, is that it does not matter who it is.
Yeah.
So there are some fraudsters who claim to be Satoshi. The truth is, if Satoshi wanted to come out publicly, he could do so with certainty because he has the keys to the first Bitcoin that he mined. He mined, at this point, a few tens of billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. He has the keys to those Bitcoin. And it'd be trivial for the founder to prove that he's Satoshi. But the important thing is that doesn't matter. There's no Bitcoin CEO. There's no leader. There's nobody that has any unique power over Bitcoin. So if Satoshi will very likely never come out publicly because it would only hurt Bitcoin. He intentionally was anonymous, and they will stay that way. Now, NFTs. So money is fungible. So the word fungible means interchangeable. $1 is as good as any other dollar. One atom of gold is as good as any other atom. And Bitcoin is also mainly fungible. One Bitcoin is the same as any other Bitcoin. But NFTs are non-fungible tokens. So, for example, a property deed is non-fungible. Your house is not interchangeable with somebody else's house. Your car is not as unique as well. And so NFTs are digital assets that are unique. Currently, the NFTs that we have are for art. This year was involved in a project where I produced NFTs for music royalties. So when you buy the music NFT, you get rights to the income stream from people listening to that music. That was featured by Billboard and Rolling Stone magazine. That's another NFT. But mostly today's NFTs are art. I think it's kind of a fad, but I've been wrong about a lot of things before. But they are selling individual NFTs for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. So it's definitely very popular.
Right. I know that Tom Brady is probably bringing out his own NFT lineup. Go Pats.
If I were an artist, I would be selling NFTs because people with a lot of money to spare apparently are buying them, but I'm not an artist.
Well, David, I've enjoyed talking to you, and I've learned quite a bit, and I appreciate this very much. Where can we find you on the web?
So if you want to get started with Bitcoin, please check my website, thebitcoinconsultancy.com. I have a newsletter you can follow. If you can hire me to teach you exactly how to buy and hold Bitcoin. If you run into trouble with your Bitcoin and you need some help, walletrecovery.info. And I will help you out. And if you're looking for a managed investment fund in Bitcoin, that's vellum.capital.
Very good. Great. Very good.
Thanks, David.
We've been chatting with David Vexler of the Bitcoin Consultancy. David, thanks for manning the foxhole with us today.
Blair, Martin, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.